So let's look at edge detection. A convolution mask operators, we have seen some of them for edge enhancement. And we already saw earlier, under the properties of the Fourier transform and the definition of differentiation in the Laplacian, that differentiation leads to the detection of edges. The Laplacian gives you edges in all directions. And we also saw how we could get horizontal and vertical derivatives, which extract edges in the corresponding direction. So some of these we have seen earlier. The basic observation is that an edge is characterized by a large change in the gray level from one side to the other at a particular orientation, depending upon the shape of the object and how the edge is oriented in the image space. So gradients or derivatives measure the rate of change in the x direction, in the y direction. You may combine them or use the Laplacian for omnidirectional edge analysis or detection. So we saw some definitions of the derivatives, but let's write them again. The derivative in the y direction going backwards, taking a backward difference, is fmn, the current pixel, minus the previous pixel. Now, using matrix notation, the first index refers to the row direction, but that if you take the previous row, m and m minus 1, then you are taking a vertical difference. So I call that y. If you are using fxy, then it must be applied in the second index. So again, depending upon how you are implementing and writing your image, you may have to shift or interchange these two. So if that is one direction, the other direction is fmn minus fmn minus 1. So it's a difference in either direction. But both of these are looking backward in the raster scanning order or matrix order. As I mentioned earlier, causality is not of concern in image processing, so you could also look forward and take the difference fm plus 1 n minus fmn. So you take this pixel and take the difference either the one before or one after, depending upon which way you are looking, or one above and one below. So that's what is shown here. So you could take two possible types of derivatives for each direction. Now, when you take only one difference like that in one direction, as I said earlier, a noisy pixel or pixels with noise could lead to large differences and then could affect your decision making as to whether a particular large difference is due to noise or due to an actual edge present. So they are based upon only, these differences are based upon only two pixels for each measure, and they are susceptible to noise or outliers or spurious pixel values. If you want robustness in the presence of noise and some artifacts, you could put in some averaging. And to include averaging, you could use the forward and backward differences and average them. And the averaging will give you fm plus 1n minus fm minus 1n. So just go back here, take that, and take this and average. The fmn gets cancelled out. You get this minus that divided by 2. And the same for the x. Take that, add this, the fmn cancels out. You get fmn plus 1 minus fmn minus 1, and half of that. So you get these differences for the x and y directions, where by averaging, the central pixel vanishes, and you get a difference between two pixels that are separated by 2 pixel distance, and half of that for scaling. Now, if you want to do that in all directions, above and below and left and right, then you get operators like this, where to get the x derivative, you take the difference between that pixel and this. For the operator centered at this location, you're using two values in the previous row, two values in the current row, two values in the next row. For each of these, there is averaging performed, like what we saw just now. And then you add for the previous row and the next row, so you're averaging in the other direction too. So you're taking 3 differences, but actually that involves 6 differences in this manner, averaged, all in the same direction. And you are making use of the fact or taking advantage of the fact that the image is a two-dimensional function, so you can average in both directions. And then you do the other in the y direction. Now you could switch the plus and minus 1, 2 if you want to maintain sensitivity to direction. You can put the minus 1 there. So these operators are known as privet operators, and the major advantage here is that you're averaging the differences in over multiple pixels, and if there is noise present in the image, you get a good reliable indicator of the derivative in the corresponding direction without being affected much by noise. The assumption is that when you average in these operators or using six differences really, then the effect of noise is cancelled out. The gradient GF, the G boldface is a vector, you get the X gradient plus J, the Y gradient. So you can write it as a complex quantity, or you can take the magnitude by taking the square root of the sum of the squares of the two and get the angle as the arctangent of the Y over X gradient, where these GFY and GFX are obtained by convolving the image F with the masks shown here. So these are linear shift invariant operators that are implemented as convolution. And again, because of symmetry, it doesn't matter if you reverse them or not, they remain the same. So they can be applied as mask operators, which would be the same as convolution. Sobel suggested that when you're averaging in this manner, you could increase the weight for the difference that applies to the row or the column of the pixel that is being processed. It simply increases the weight here by doubling the weight here and keeping lower weights onto for the other differences in the preceding row or column or the next row or column. It's a minor modification to the privet operator. I don't remember if Sobel came up with this first and then Privet modified, or if Privet came up with that and then Sobel modified. Privet has a book on image processing, and the interesting observation here is that while these may appear to be fairly simple masks, there is some underlying theory, but these are fairly simple operations at this stage of knowledge of image processing. Now, 40 years ago, that was new. So the point that we can make is that all of the simple things have been done, and some of them have names associated with them. If you want an operator to be named after you, you have to do something really advanced. All of the simple things have been finished. It appears simple now, but I'm sure 40 or 50 years ago when these were designed, they were considered to be significant developments in the area of image processing. You can turn around these masks and then write for 45 degrees in this manner and 135 degrees in this manner, all limited to 3x3 masks. So the choice of angles or orientations is limited. You can do the same thing for the Sobel gradient. And again, you can switch the sign, take minus 1 here and plus 1 there, if the direction matters to you. In many cases, you'll be taking the magnitude, so the direction doesn't matter. The question is whether you want to go 0 to 360 degrees or 0 to 180 degrees. Note that in all of these masks that we have seen with the Sobel and Privet names, the 3x3 masks, they're all derivatives or gradient operators. The mask coefficients add up to 0. So there is zero output values in areas of constant gray level in the input. So when you apply the mask here or in that region, although the input values are different, the output will be the same, zero. And there is loss of intensity information as a consequence. So derivative operator masks with coefficient weight total equal to zero will give you images with no intensity information. There is another operator known as the Roberts operator that's interesting. It is not 3x3, and you cannot center it on a pixel. It is a forward-looking operator in the sense, in raster scanning order, that is, if you read the first row and the next row and the next row and so on, the operator is centered, is positioned with this corner at the current pixel. So the difference is taken from that pixel to the next diagonally connected pixel, and in this manner from the next pixel in the same row across diagonally in the opposite direction. In terms of coordinates, matrix indexing notation, you have fm plus 1, n plus 1 minus fmn plus the absolute value plus the absolute value of the other difference, fm plus 1, n minus fm, n plus 1. Note that it is looking forward. The incrementing is plus 1, plus 1, plus 1, plus 1. The advantage then is you can do the operation in the same array. Because it is a forward-looking operator, the result may be written in the same input array. You don't need another array to store the result. Because a pixel that has been processed and a new value has been applied will not be used again in the order of processing in this manner. Whereas in the case of the other masks, you cannot do that. You cannot write the result in the same array. You need another array. Now, in the 1960s and 70s, computers had very limited memory, and you could not have multiple arrays of large size of the order of a few hundred by a few hundred pixels. So this was an advantage then. So Roberts came up with this operator and said, use 2x2 cross differences and then combine them in this manner to get a gradient and have a forward-looking operator such that you can write the results in C2 or in the same array. The gradient will look a little different from the other gradients, but there is a computational or implementational advantage. Nowadays, of course, computers have not unlimited, but large memory available, so memory is not a big issue. But images are also getting bigger and bigger. The mammograms that we use in our studies are digitized to 4,000 by 5,000 pixels, so that is 20 megapixels. And in remote sensing, there are images acquired that are much, much larger than that, several hundred megabytes or megapixels per image. And then some of these techniques may provide you advantages if those large arrays start approaching the limit of memory on your computer. So you cannot have multiple arrays. So here is the shapes image and different types of gradient. So this is the gradient magnitude in part B, where you see the edges of all of the objects extracted. And the value here is proportional to the difference. So when you have an object with small difference between the object value and the background, the edge value or the gradient value detected at the edges is small. So inside the object and in the background, the output is zero. Wherever the pixel values are uniform, both inside the dark region, the bright region, or in the background, the output is zero. Now, gradients, of course, unless you take the magnitude, the values could be negative, and again, you have to handle negative values. And here, in part C and D and E and F, I have the derivatives for the horizontal direction, vertical direction, 45 degrees, and 135 degrees. And here, I'm getting values over the range minus 765 to plus 765. Because I did not put any normalization factor for the 3x3 masks. So there are negative values, and if I take a certain range, I took minus 200 to plus 200 and mapped to 0 to 255. So the lower limit, minus 200, is black, the upper limit, 200, is white, and in between, zero gradient is that intermediate shade of gray. So you need to decide how you want to display the result with negative values. As you can see, you are getting, and by the way, these are using the Privet operators. Here, the vertical edges are detected, but the horizontal edges are all zero. In part D, the horizontal edges are detected, the vertical edges have been eliminated, and so on. Here in part E, the 45 degree edge has been detected. And in part F, the 135 degree edge has been detected. So depending upon what kind of an edge you want to detect and the orientation, you can use these masks. And with the clock image, there are some interesting things happening. The frame of the clock is almost vertical and horizontal, and the derivatives, depending upon the orientation, will enhance, in this case, the vertical edge, but remove the horizontal edge. In this case, enhance the horizontal edge, including those on the wall, but remove the vertical, including the numerals 1. That's nearly vertical. That's been removed. And here we have, with the 135 degree difference, the minute hand apparently, it was there, it just so happened that the minute hand was at 135 degrees and that got removed. So depending upon the gradient operator you apply, the corresponding edges are enhanced or removed. And of course you may combine them, the horizontal and vertical, and get the gradient magnitude for all directions. A few more examples and I'll just skip through them. You could look at the others in the book if you wish. Now these 3x3 operators we saw are of limited spatial extent and each one has a specific orientation. The Laplacian we saw is a combination of the two second order derivatives in the x and y directions. The Laplacian is omnidirectional, that is, it detects edges in all directions because of the combination of the two partial derivatives in the x and y directions. It gives you double-edged output with positive and negative values at the edges that I showed earlier. But it is not possible to derive the angle of the edge from the result because it's been combined. The Laplacian is also sensitive to noise because there is no averaging included in the operator as in the case of the Privet and Sobel operators, where you average the x and y derivatives over multiple pixels. The Laplacian also has gain that increases quadratically with frequency, and that causes significant amplification of noise at higher frequency components. Typically, the image components would be lower at high frequencies, but noise would be present, and by applying a gain that is increasing quadratically, you will have a problem, and you get a result that is typically very noisy. So the Laplacian operator may not be directly useful in edge detection because of these problems. Now, there is an interesting extension to the Laplacian, which is, just a minute, let me go further here, which is to apply a Gaussian along with the Laplacian and then to do something else, which is illustrated here. So suppose this is the profile of an edge where we have a trapezoidal pattern. You take the first derivative, you get these two pulses indicating the upstroke and the downstroke, or the leading edge and the trailing edge of this pulse. You take the second derivative, you get these impulses. Now, an interesting point emerges here, and that is in the second derivative, which is the Laplacian, where we have an edge, you have a variation from positive to negative or from negative to positive in the output. The true edge exists somewhere in between here, which is what is called a zero crossing. There is a zero crossing present from positive to negative or negative to positive at locations where you have an edge in the image. You need to know where exactly in this area the real edge is present, because there could be blurring and the width of this pulse the width of the edge would have a relationship to the location within the zero area. In practice, you may not get a zero like this, but you would get a crossing of the zero axis between two values. So one of the ideas that's been proposed for the detection of edges is not to worry with the magnitude of the gradient or difference, but to find where the second derivative changes sign. And wherever there is a change of sign, that is a potential edge. There could be the effect of noise, and noise could create some problems, but if you can smooth and remove noise beforehand, and even if the edges are smoothed in this manner, you can see that there will be a zero crossing in the second derivative near the locations of edges. So the double-edged output of a Laplacian indicates this property, that there is a zero crossing in between the positive and negative outputs across an edge, even when the edge is significantly blurred in the original image. And this is useful in the development of robust edge detectors, where you don't care about the magnitude of the gradient, but look for this change in sign. So noise sensitivity is reduced by including a smoothing operator. You could do it before or after. If they are linear operators, it doesn't matter. But if you're putting a nonlinear step in between, then you need to be concerned about the sequence. Now, the Laplacian operator itself is a linear operator. And when you have multiple linear operators in sequence, you can combine them into one operator by convolving each impulse response with the other. So a sequence of linear filters may be reduced to just one filter, whose impulse response is the convolution of all of the individual impulse responses, or whose transfer function is equal to the product of the individual transfer functions in the frequency domain. So, a Laplacian filter could be combined with a Gaussian mask. A Gaussian mask is smooth and positive, and when you convolve an image with a smooth positive function, you'll be smoothing the image and suppressing noise. So if you want to put a convolution function that looks like a Gaussian and then do the Laplacian, you may combine the two and have the Laplacian of Gaussian. It doesn't matter which one comes first, but if you apply the Laplacian to the Gaussian, it is known as the log operator or the Laplacian of Gaussian operator. Now note that this log is not the mathematical log operation, but it is written as LOG. The amount of smoothing can be controlled by the Gaussian by specifying the sigma or the sigma square variance or the standard deviation of the Gaussian. So you're not limited to a 3x3 or 5x5 mask. The mask size could be anything. You specify how wide the blurring function should be. And then this operator becomes scalable. Rather than specifying the mask size as 3x3, 5x5, you say, I want a Gaussian of sigma equal to so many pixels, and implement that either in the space domain or in the frequency domain, because the Fourier transform for Gaussian is a Gaussian, and then you have a corresponding filter in the frequency domain. But if you want a convolution mask, then you have to compute the values of the Gaussian in the image domain, and beyond a certain spatial extent, the values become negligible, and then you can truncate. So your Gaussian mask could be 5x5 or 7x7 or 9x9 or 50x50, it doesn't matter. Typically, you would choose an odd size, so it could be 51x51 if the sigma is fairly large and you want to keep values up to a certain threshold. You could also combine the two operations together and create a mask of the Laplacian of Gaussian, rather than doing it twice and wasting computing time. So suppose you use this Gaussian, gxy equal to minus exponential minus x squared plus y squared over 2 sigma squared. Typically, if you're looking at a PDF, there is a scaling factor, but here we don't care about scale factors. You may scale the image later on if you wish. Take the derivative of this. The partial derivatives in x and y are these values, and combine them to to get the Laplacian. So this is a Gaussian with a certain spread sigma. Now this is a function of space, x and y. So there is no mean associated with this. The Laplacian now, written as Laplacian of Gaussian as a radial function of radius r equal to square root of x square plus y square from the center of this function, because this is isotropic or rotationally symmetric, is r square minus 2 sigma square over sigma to the power of 4 and this exponential. By combining these two and substituting x square plus y square equal to r square. So this is the Laplacian of Gaussian operator. Depending upon the value of sigma, you have functions of certain width and spatial extent. So you compute a corresponding mask, and when the values get very small, up to you, less than 0.1 or some value, you stop. So you can truncate the mask. So this is an isotropic function, a function of r radius only, and has positive and negative values, and due to its shape, it is referred to as the Mexican hat, like that. So here on the left-hand side, you have a Gaussian mesh plot here, and this is a Laplacian of Gaussian where you have the positive central lobe, central part, and then the black ring indicates the negative part around it, and in the mesh plot, you can see that there is a negative part. And then it goes out, and at some point you can stop, cut it out. The Fourier transform of a Gaussian is a Gaussian. Let me just check. Yeah. So part E is the Fourier transform magnitude spectrum of the Gaussian, which is a low-pass filter, which is also a Gaussian. But when you apply the Laplacian of Gaussian, or when you take the Laplacian of Gaussian, you get this function, which is a bandpass filter. The Gaussian is a low-pass filter, so the gain reduces beyond a certain cutoff frequency. The Laplacian is a filter that has gain that is increasing quadratically. So when you take the product of the two, in the image domain, they are convolved. In the frequency domain, their spectra get multiplied, and you get this bandpass filter, where the gain is zero for low frequency, and then increases, and then decreases. So this is an isotropic filter. The gain is the same for all angles if you go around the frequency domain. Here are sections or profiles of the Laplacian of Gaussian at the top. And let me see. Yeah, this is the, these are two plots of two Laplacian of Gaussian functions. The dashed line is the Gaussian, and the solid line is the corresponding Laplacian of Gaussian. And if you spin this around the zero point, you get the two-dimensional function we saw. Part A is with sigma equal to 4, so it is broad. Part B is with sigma equal to 2 here, which is narrower. So depending upon the extent of smoothing you want, you adjust the sigma of the Gaussian to be narrow, like here, 2 pixels, or at the top to be broad, 4 pixels. The broader the Gaussian, the more the low-pass filtering effect. In the frequency domain, the radial sections of the Fourier transform magnitudes are shown here for sigma equal to 4 at the top and sigma equal to 2 at the bottom. The Fourier transform of the Gaussian is shown in dashed line, which is a low-pass filter. The Fourier transform of the Laplacian of Gaussian is shown in solid line, which is a band-pass filter. The gain at zero frequency is zero because of the Laplacian. And because the Gaussian is a low-pass filter, the gain at high frequencies is reduced to almost zero. That depends upon the sigma you specify. In between, there is a band of frequencies that is passed. So now you see that, well, I did not plot the Laplacian. Had I plotted the Fourier transform of the Laplacian, it would have been a quadratically increasing function. So the problem with enhancement of noise associated with the Laplacian is overcome, and the gain at high frequencies is now reduced. So noise is suppressed. Within the pass band, you have increasing gain with frequency, which is a characteristic of a derivative operation. So there is increasing gain in that pass band, and then it is smooth, or higher frequencies are rejected. Zero frequency is removed, so intensity information is lost. So the question now is, what should be the sigma? And that depends upon how much smoothing you want, how much noise is present in the image, and the bandwidth of the features of interest. So here are some examples. The shapes test image again. The Laplacian of Gaussian here in part B with sigma equal to 1 pixel. I used a fairly narrow Gaussian. I don't have any noise here. And in this, I detected the zero crossings. And part C, you see the locations of the zero crossings in the Laplacian of Gaussian shown in part B. So you see all the edges have been marked here. If I increase sigma to 2 pixels, I get this, where the edges are now a little different, but the edges are also smooth because of the effect of sigma equal to 2. So when you increase sigma, the locations of the edges could be modified slightly, and the sharpness of the edges could also be affected because of smoothing. But that is required, the smoothing is required if there is noise. In this case, there is no noise, so smoothing or using a larger sigma is seen to be creating this blurring as a problem. But in the case of a noisy image, you will see that it is necessary to increase sigma. So here is a clock image with the noise that is inherent in the image. B is Laplacian of Gaussian with sigma equal to 1 pixel. C is the zero crossing map for that image B. So you see that the noise pixels or noise values in many regions have created these wrong edges detected by the zero crossings. By smoothing using sigma equal to 2, we get the result in part D where the major edges have been detected. But by smoothing with 2 pixels, or rather, with smoothing with sigma equal to 2, the effect of noise has been reduced. All these spurious pixels don't appear anymore. But some of the finer details, such as the numerals in the clock, have not been detected. The big edges of the clock, the lines on the wall, and the hour hand and the minute hand, and some of the blobs corresponding to the objects, the numerals have been detected, but you don't see fine edges related to the individual characters on the clock face. Those are lost. So there is a price to pay here, but there are methods that could be used to combine the zero crossings at various values of sigma, 1, 2, 3, 4 pixels, and so on, and obtain the stable edges indicated in all of these images. And we will look at some of those techniques later. So here I just want to show you what the effect of the Laplacian of Gaussian is, and that the zero crossings that you mark may correspond to real edges, like what you see here, but also spurious pixels detected due to noise. When there is no noise, you get good edges. And when there is no noise, the use of a large sigma could lead to blurring and distortion of shape and edges. But if there is noise, you need smoothing to detect reliable to detect edges with good reliability. Here is that myocyte image where the background noise is causing a severe problem here. And with sigma equal to 4 pixels, some of the background pixels can be eliminated, but still there is quite a lot of disturbance in the background. The knee, I use sigma equal to 1, 2, 3, 4. And in this sequence, you can see that by using larger and larger sigma, the significant edges remain, such as edges of the knee, the outer skin edge, the edges of the bones, they remain as you increase sigma. The insignificant details of small spatial extent are smoothed and removed as you increase sigma. Okay? This is the chest image, but I think that's enough. Any questions?